A few weeks ago, you may never have heard of the Ebola virus. Well, now you can't stop hearing about it. Although only a few Americans have been infected, the virus's potential has several federal agencies working to better understand, treat, and find a cure for this deadly disease. Joining us with more is Dr. Anthony Fauci, director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases. Dr. Fauci, great to have you on.
Good to be with you.
All right, so talk about what NIH is doing, and then we'll expand to some of the other agencies that have a hand on this whole issue.
Well, as the major biomedical research limb of the federal government, the NIH is involved in research, particularly in developing countermeasures against Ebola in the form of vaccines to prevent it and therapies to treat it, as well as other things such as diagnostics and understanding the fundamental nature of how this virus works, how it spreads, and how it causes diseases. So we do fundamental research, but the end game of that research is to develop vaccines and therapies.
Now, you were working on this, I presume, before this horrible outbreak that's been affecting Africa.
Oh, definitely. For at least several years. In fact, Ebola falls under the broader category of the hemorrhagic fever viruses, which are extremely dangerous viruses in the sense that they have a very high mortality rate and case fatality, and we began working in earnest on them. We've been working for decades on it, but really in earnest right after 9/11 and the anthrax attacks, when it became clear that hemorrhagic viruses could actually be used as weapons of bioterror. So that was the thing that stimulated it. But then the natural occurrence of Ebola, which we've had outbreaks over the years since 1976, that have always gone under very good control, but this most recent one, I think, points out the potential for how this can actually spread well beyond just a small, isolated outbreak.
Now, the people that have brought in, the people from the United States that caught it over there that have come back, and they seem to be recovering now, and I contrast that with sort of the chaos in some of the parts of Africa that are following this thing. So, you know, is it fair to say that the society structures and the degree of, I don't know, infrastructure that a nation has is also important, just as a vaccine would be?
Well, it's not only important, it's really the defining issue. Even though we would love to have a vaccine and therapies, in fact, this type and these kinds of outbreaks can and have been contained and eliminated by pure good public health practices and infection control. And the reason you're seeing this essentially out-of-control outbreak in West African countries is due to the minimal infrastructure, health infrastructure, and the capability of containing and isolating the people who are sick, as well as protecting the people who are taking care of them with the proper protective equipment. So it is an inadequacy of healthcare capability that is letting this epidemic propagate itself.
And what do you think the potential in Africa is? I mean, there's been 1,000 or so people killed so far, but, you know, what could it do?
Well, certainly it could continue to spread within the countries. There was a big scare there, and the scare is not yet over, but we're encouraged by the fact that we haven't seen secondary outbreaks from the initial introduction into Nigeria. You recall a while ago that a Liberian American flew from Liberia to Nigeria, was infected, did not know it, and when he landed in Nigeria, inadvertently affected several of the people who were taking care of him in the healthcare sector. They got infected, but we're hopeful, and it looks good so far, but you know, you never know until you have to wait a bit longer, that there isn't an explosion of cases in Nigeria. If there were, that would really be a problem, because Nigeria is the most populous country in Africa.
All right, so getting to United States efforts, where does NIH leave off and, say, the CDC begin in this whole process?
Well, I would put it the other way. The CDC is the one that begins because they're the disease detectives. They're the ones that go out there with surveillance, identification, and combine their capabilities in surveillance and understanding and implementing public health measures with helping other countries. So, for example, right now, The CDC has sent 50, or is sending 50, there soon will be 50, of their healthcare experts, the people who are going to do contact tracing, the people who are going to help set up situations where you can control it. So the CDC is really on the front line there with surveillance and infection control. They have global capabilities as well as their primary responsibility here in the United States. Then the NIH comes in with research to try and develop the countermeasures. So it's a very complementing partnership, including also the FDA, the other government agency involved with the regulation and approval of drugs and vaccines and diagnostics.
And what about the Defense Department? Because I read they have an abiding interest in this because of the possibility of troops contracting things like Ebola or these hemorrhagic fever viruses throughout the world.
Well, the Defense Department historically have been very important players in things like this from two standpoints. One, you mentioned that if there had to be the calling in of troops with good command and control that can function well under these difficult circumstances, they also have a major investment in health. So their capability of mobilizing physicians and health providers is really an underappreciated asset that we have with our military, who have excellent capabilities of doing that. So they're also important partners in all of this.
We're speaking with Dr. Anthony Fauci, director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases. And I know one of your abiding lifetime work, opuses really, has been the work on HIV and AIDS. Is there anything from that battle that informs what we're doing here with Ebola?
Well, yeah, it's the common denominator that diseases break out. I mean, we recognized AIDS in 1981. It likely was percolating some time before then, but it really just exploded upon the global society. It's what we call an emerging disease. Ebola, different in many ways than HIV, is also an emerging infection. You know, it comes out from what we call a zoonotic. It comes from an animal, infects a human, and then it spreads among humans. The modalities of spread are quite different between HIV and Ebola. Ebola, even though HIV has infected tens of millions of people over the 30-plus years that we've known about AIDS, there's been over 70 million people infected and over 35 million people dead. So the enormity of the AIDS problem completely dwarfs the Ebola problem, but Ebola is a scary disease because it is a very cataclysmic disease. It infects someone, and literally within a couple of days, they may be dead, with a mortality that can be as high as 90%. So when you think of Ebola, it's frightening, even though the numbers compared to diseases like AIDS and malaria and tuberculosis are relatively small. It certainly gains the attention of the global public because of how cataclysmic and scary it is.
And so presumably in trying to find a vaccine, you have people at NIH that are handling it in some manner. What are the special precautions that are instituted to make sure it stays in the petri dish?
Well, whenever you handle a hemorrhagic fever virus, you have to do it in the highest containment capabilities, in the sense of the proper protective equipment, the proper facilities. The Centers for Disease Control are the ones that set the standards for how you handle select agents. So any researcher anywhere here at the NIH, at the CDC, or even grantees throughout the country who have and get federal funding to do their research, they have to abide by certain strict guidelines and regulations that are set forth by our CDC on how you handle select agents.
Now, several pictures have been published, I guess they're electron photo micrographs or whatever you call them, of the virus, the long stringy thing. How do you get samples?
Well, you get the samples under the strict protocol conditions of how you handle them. You can get it from bodily fluids, you can get it from blood, but when you handle them, you have to make sure you handle them under the proper containment facilities. And as I mentioned, that's very strictly regulated and controlled by the CDC.
Now, with respect to a vaccine, can you say how close you are to having one? And if you do have something that looks promising, how does it get produced and commercialized?
Well, I'll give you an example. There are a number of vaccine candidates out there that have been developed. We've been working on a vaccine for several years now, different iterations of it, that we get better and better in the sense of being able to induce the kind of response in a person that you would predict would be protective. The one that's most promising now is very close to going into humans. In fact, as we speak, it'll likely be just a few weeks from now, in the very early part of September, likely the first week in September, we'll start what's called a phase one clinical trial, first time in a human. We've done very successful animal studies in non-human primates, namely monkeys. It looks good in that model. It's safe, and it induces a response that seems to protect the monkeys from lethal challenge of Ebola. Next step is to put it into humans in phase one, like I said, in September. Likely we'll finish that somewhere at the end of November. And then after that, if the results look good, then you move on to the next phase of development, which is more people, more safety data, and more data to determine if it's inducing the kind of immune response. Those are the step-by-step progression that you have when you're developing a vaccine. Hopefully, sometime by the end of 2015, we'll have enough data to be able to make decisions about whether we can deploy it, or maybe even sooner, depending upon the emergent nature of if it, is it safe and is it needed. And that really is something that is regulated by the FDA, and sometimes when you need to get a product out sooner than you would normally do, that you do it under what's called an emergency expanded access. And we don't want to get there yet because we still haven't shown that it's safe and that it induces the kind of response that we want. But that's what we're going to be starting in the beginning of September.
And I remember, you know, the sugar cubes and bread cubes of yesteryear with polio vaccines and so forth. I'm old enough to remember those. How does the government decide, is this something everybody should have, or just people flying to Africa, or what?
Well, that's a good question. Certainly it is not what you would call a universal vaccine, the way measles vaccine is, or polio vaccine. This is something that would very likely be targeted to people who might be at risk. And the people who are most at risk right now are the healthcare providers and the laboratory workers who work on the specimens. So those are the ones that are the targets of a vaccine, if and when we get a vaccine deployable. Depending on the nature of an outbreak in a country, you might want to be vaccinating beyond the healthcare workers and the people who are at risk in particular regions. But by no means would this be a vaccine that you would want to give to everyone throughout the world, because it's not a universal global threat the way polio or measles or other diseases that clearly permeate the entire society of the world.
Now, you have a pretty big institute there at NIH. Is it safe to say that you're spending a lot of personal time overseeing this particular effort right now?
I think it'd be more than safe to say. I think that Ebola has essentially consumed us, certainly in the Department of Health and Human Services, the CDC, the FDA, and the NIH have been working 24/7 on this over the last several weeks.
All right. Dr. Anthony Fauci is director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases. As always, thanks for joining us.
Good to be with you.